Okay, so I'm borrowing a question from the Colbert questionnaire.
Okay.
And he asks people,
what's your favorite sandwich?
Well, he does ask that, but and what would your answer be?
I think it's crunchy peanut butter with goldfish on it.
Oh my God.
Like cheese goldfish.
That's incredible. I've never had that, but now I'm going to have
great.
That.
It's great.
Can we make those next time, like for like hiking
sure.
sandwiches?
Sure.
Do you think they'd still be crunchy in the middle of the day?
I think so. I don't think that it's not.
There's
peanut butter's
one
not
way to know.
Peanut butter's not that wet where it's going to like cause something to get soggy.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
It's more of a solid. It's kind of like that in between solid liquid state.
It's peanut plasma. Butter.
It is plasma. Yeah. From the stars to our blood.
That's it. This is the plasma of our lives. I think I would say meatball parm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fair.
I love
that's
a meatball
a good
parm
one.
Sandwich.
But what if we put a meatball on with the peanut butter and the goldfish?
I don't know that that's going to work.
I think
well,
meatballs.
I don't. Meatballs
I think,
and
wait a
peanut
minute.
Butter.
I think
don't
it would
know.
Actually be great.
But are we also including like marinara here?
I think so. I think I would add some sauce
this
into
is
the
a
mix.
No. This is a
I
no from
would
me.
Be curious.
I cannot do peanut butter plus
Fine.
Marinara.
If we don't do the marinara, then I think peanut butter base, slice some meatballs, put it in the middle, add some goldfish on
now,
top.
Now, here's what I'll say is if we wanted to do like meatball plus, like if we wanted to make like a peanut butter drizzle, right, over the meatball and maybe some honey to do like a sort of sweet,
oh, honey, I don't
nutty
know about that.
Meatball situation. I do like the idea of like a savory meatball with like a honey and a peanut butter on it and then add like some
artisanal some goldfish.
Artisanal goldfish crunchies. I'm into that.
Okay, great.
That,
great.
So
not your question.
Not
though.
My question, but I loved that
Tangent.
Question. I mean, I love the Colbert questionnaire. I watch it every time. Is what is the scariest animal?
What's the scariest animal?
Yeah.
I'm looking right at him. Mankind. What is the scariest animal? I would say for me, because I do love the ocean and grew up near the ocean, I feel like sharks are scary to me. That's a healthy fear of
I
the ocean
see.
Because
okay.
of like you can't see them
no.
objectively, not all the time can
no.
you see them coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are dead or you lost a limb.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
That is true. You loved Jaws.
Punch him in the nose. You know, I've never really actually seen Jaws all the way through. So.
I haven't either. So
great.
We things will add to our
to
list.
Add to my fear base.
Right. Right.
What's the scariest animal for you?
So when it comes to that question.
Wait, let me get this book out that's got a list in it.
Oh,
you
for
have
me,
a lot.
I have a lot.
Yeah.
It depends. I mean, I do think it's circumstantial. For a while I thought my answer to this question would be a polar bear. Because obviously they're super deadly and
sure.
will kill anything. Like if you're encountering a polar bear, you're not alive.
You're not
anymore.
Encountering a polar bear.
You're not. You're done for. But fear doesn't run through my whole body like when I see a polar bear. The same way it does when I see some snakes. Some snakes will absolutely like just send me into complete
Ladies
fear.
And gentlemen, roll the clip reel. Because yeah. That black racer in Smoky Mountains had you literally cartoon cloud of dusty. I've
it's
never seen
true.
You run so fast.
It's true. Yeah. And that thing sidewinded all the way down the embankment. It was not cute. No. So yeah, I think snakes.
Okay.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park. At the national park. At the national park. Follow you, I'll follow you there.
Mm. We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land, also known as Saguaro National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Tone Odum, Odumjuwad, and Hohokam people.
If you joined us for last episode, we hiked from the King Canyon Trail all the way up to Wasson Peak. We thought for a second we might have to get on the Sweetwater Trail, but then realized that was not what we needed to do, and we needed to switch back our way up through very exposed but beautiful cactusy super bloom landscape up to the top of Wasson Peak, which is in Saguaro National Park, which is basically in the city of Tucson.
That's right. We went to Saguaro National Park on a trip that included three other national parks, including Guadalupe Mountains National Park, Carlsbad Cavern, and also White Sands National Park. And this was our fourth park of the week. And this is our first day of hiking in Saguaro.
Yeah, and probably one of the warmest days that we had on this entire trip, aside from when we were in White Sands National Park. This was an extremely beautiful trail, especially made more beautiful by the fact that we were here for a super bloom.
That's right.
So we got to see not only the archetypal cacti, which are saguaro cacti, but we got to see a ton of other desert plants and smaller cactuses. Everything was sort of popping at this point in the year, and it was beautiful.
Wasson Peak is the highest peak in the park. We hiked our way up to the top. And as you mentioned, we took the King Canyon Trail and then this one section of the Hugh Norris Trail, which was full of incline, which led us to a saddle. And then we hiked the 0.3 miles up to the peak of Wasson. While we were there, there were quite a few people from New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious.
Yep.
We talked to all of them. We said hello. And then we decided that it was time to head back down. Now, we wanted to make this trail day a giant loop.
Yeah.
Up to this point, we had gone 3.4 miles. We were going to be going a total of 7.9 miles because the back end of this loop was going to be 4.5 miles. But this back end was going to be basically all downhill. And it was going to include the Hugh Norris Trail, which links up to a few other trails along the way down. And that was going to be our loop today.
So we make our way, after sitting for quite some time, having lunch and chatting, off of Wasson Peak. And it was quite an arduous uphill. So we're really glad at this point to just have the rest of this trail be a pretty decent downhill and to get some relief in that way. So there's a 0.3 mile extender that brings one to the peak of Wasson Peak from the Hugh Norris Trail, which is basically how we led our way up. So we begin to head down. And the views from this spot are unmatched. There's a lot to see here, not just, you know, from the peak you get a really good view, but from this side you're also seeing more of the landscape down below. And because it's the tallest peak in the park, you can see 4 miles. We can see rolling hills, mountainous formations in the distance.
We can see saguaro cacti covering all of these hills and valleys, and also the super bloom that's happening all throughout. So we head down the connected trail and we reach a fork. Now, if we were to head to the left, that would be going back the way we came. But since we're going to make this a loop, we decided to head to the right or keep going straight in order to get on this other section of the Hugh Norris Trail. And immediately it is a gentle downhill and we are relieved.
So on this side of the mountain, at the start of this trail, it was a little bit more shady here, which is a great break from the exposure that we had coming up. It's not a lengthy time, but based off of where the sun was, we had a little bit of a break here. We are definitely much happier and a little less winded because we are headed on the way down here.
This leg of the trail is 1.9 miles long. So we know we're going downhill for about 2 miles, which is not the longest stretch, but because it's downhill, it feels much better. And because of this attitudes change, we're finding our way back to our own warmth and joy because we're no longer going uphill. This section of the Hugh Norris Trail is along a ridge. And so often to the left, there is just like a taller mountainous area. And then to the right, it sweeps downward. And so we're kind of like hiking behind the peaks of this ridge as we're going down. There's a couple of times where we have to switch back in order to go down a little bit further. But it's mostly just a long sweeping stretch along this back ridge.
And it's fairly gentle. It's a nice, easy kind of pace to head down this way. On the way up to Wasson Peak, we noticed that everything was in bloom. on this side of the trail, that bloom was less present and less vibrant. So it's clear that based off of, I'm assuming, we also saw way less cacti over here. This was a pretty barren section initially. I'm assuming that the other side of the mountain just maybe is more sun, more water based off of
all of that
those
stuff.
Resources, obviously getting a little bit more, which is why there's more abundance on that side of the mountain. It's clear that this is just not getting as much sun, and it's often shady. And I think probably also the grade of everything on this side. There was some pretty steep sweeps down in this section that weren't as gentle as the switchbacks that we were seeing or the canyon that we kind of came up through.
Absolutely. Yeah. We get to this one extremely long sweep that we're going to be on for a while. And it contains like a big chunk of this 1.9, and it's like right toward the end of this leg. So we're on it. We're making our way down. We can sort of see different parts of Saguaro off to the right. There's definitely other trails happening. Like the Hugh Norris Trail does continue on, but we are about to get off of it. But then suddenly we heard a sound.
Well, I heard a sound.
You? No. I heard the sound too.
Mm-hmm.
We both heard the sound, and it was a sound that we did not expect or want to hear.
Right. And with that, let's take our first break.
Hey, y'all. It's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season 1 is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Okay, as promised from our last episode, episode 155, which was where we took the King Canyon Trail up to Wasson Peak, we discovered it would be fun if we did our astrology big three, but
as divas.
And, so, yeah. Yes. So your sun sign, your moon sign, and your rising sign.
Right.
What three divas are those for?
Well,
you?
Do we need to explain for none of the, if there are some non-astrological girlies out there, like
okay.
what your sun, your rising, and your moon sign, like what they relate to?
Sure. So we really love things that are deeply steeped in science and make a lot of sense, like astrology. So
I think we can enjoy empirical data and science.
Absolutely.
And also enjoy whimsy.
Exactly.
And woo-woo. Whimsy and woo-woo
and
is
astrology
the name of my company.
Definitely falls into whimsy and woo-woo, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
We're here for it. Okay, so I would describe it as your sun sign is the one, like, based on your birthday.
Right.
Those are sort of your foundational elements.
Mm-hmm.
Then your moon sign is based on the time you were born and the location. And
what's your emotionals?
It's your feelings. It's your emotions. It's sort of how you deal with emotions, how you express them. And then your rising sign is sort of like what you show the world / what you sort of slowly become more like.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes I've heard it described as like rising sign is like your public self, and then your sun sign's like your private self.
Mm.
So that's another way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can say all we want about astrology being like whimsy and whatnot, but my sun sign, we can reveal our real ones or our actual ones or our astrology ones. My sun sign is Capricorn, my moon sign is Leo, and then my rising sign is Libra.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at all of the closest people to me in my life, they are all Libras.
Mm-hmm.
that their sun sign is Libra, like yours.
So yeah, and so my sun sign is Libra. My moon sign is Cancer, and that is where the moon is at its home base. So lots of emotions. And my rising sign is Scorpio. And if you look at the closest people in my life, all of them are Scorpions.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so, but if they were divas, who would be your big three? Now, for instance, like my diva rising sign does not have to be your diva sun sign. You know what I mean?
We're not assigning a diva to, right, just exactly.
All right, Mike, what you got?
Okay, so I have three lovely ladies. I think that my sun sign is Tina Turner. This makes sense to me.
Oh, I love that.
I've loved Tina for a very long time.
Because you know what? You better be good to me.
Because you better be good to me. I'm going to say that my rising sign, and this makes sense because she's a spooky girl, is Stevie Nicks. And this one's fun, even though I don't feel like it's like, I don't feel like her music is extra emotional like my Cancer moon would be. But I'm like, you have to go in there somewhere. And it's Kylie Minogue. Is my moon sign.
Is your moon sign. So yeah. Kylie's your moon sign.
Kylie's my moon.
I love that. Okay. So you've got
Sun and Tina Turner. Rising and Stevie Nicks. Moon and Kylie Minogue.
Okay. So we do have one overlap here.
Okay. Great.
Okay. So my sun sign, I'm thinking about this and just thinking about like, I'm somebody that like, puts my head down and does the work and like just sort of is deeply curious about a bunch of things. So I think it has to be B.
Okay.
Because she's like, I'm okay, great. It doesn't exist. I'm going to just have to put the time in to build it myself. That's like, we share a lot of those philosophies. My moon sign, my feelings, there's only one and it is Celine. I just feel like we're so aligned in that way. I do feel like when I express emotion, it's very much in a Celine way. And I love it. And then my intersection here is actually my rising sign, which I also went with Kylie. Because I just feel like when I think about rising signs, or at least what it means to me, is that rising sign for me has always been like bright warmth, leaning into warmth. I think it's the Libra, whatever. And that's what Kylie reminds me of, because she does, even though Madonna said music brings the people together, I do feel like Kylie brings the people together, and it's always fun and it's always bright and it's always supportive and it's always kind. And so like, that's sort of what I'm always trying to lean into. So there we go.
Diva Big Three.
The Diva Big Three. All right, so we're standing here. Let's talk about the sound that we heard. What was the sound?
Well, I don't think we were standing. We were swiftly moving, and I was moving you more swiftly. I think I pushed into you. I was like, no, you don't need to look back. It's okay.
Oh, no, but I heard it.
Oh, you heard it, but you're like, what was that? And I was like, no worries, just keep moving. And I think I pushed into your back to move you faster. It was a rattlesnake, and I looked down, and I saw it. And I was like, oh.
That's right.
We stepped right over it.
We did hear the like of the rattle, and that made my heart skip a beat.
That'll
for
wake
sure.
you up.
It ended, and
before you go.
What I remember was I heard the sound, then I hear you pushing me, feel you pushing me, and you're like, "Just don't turn around."
Yeah,
it was very Ace of Base.
Baby, I can feel my heart like, breaking.
Like just keep going, and
baby, I can feel that snake quaking.
There it is. Don't look at the ground. And that is what you told me. You were like, you know what? Just don't turn around. Just keep going.
Yeah.
And so that turned into me running. And that's how I remember the moment. And what about you?
And how did you run? Because it wasn't dignified.
No. It was big. Flailing is a word I'd use.
It's like when an elephant sees a mouse in a cartoon.
That's it. Thank you for comparing me to an elephant.
There it
really
is.
I appreciate
there it. There it is. Everybody read between those lines.
Oh, we will. We will. I only heard the big part, Liz.
Yeah, exactly. I was thrown off by this. Not that you wouldn't expect to see something like that in a desert landscape, but we had yet to encounter a snake in a desert landscape that was like
in person
in our general field. Now, we passed snakes on the road
from the car
in Big Bend, never in that capacity.
No.
And I mean, we did see that giant black racer in yeah. Smokies.
Which
but
I reacted similarly.
You did. You did. There's a pattern here.
As did you. So let's not say like you were not running. You were moving too.
Not when that black racer appeared. That I've never seen you move so fast.
Well, that's because
you were like the Flash.
I was. Mm-hmm. I was. And there's more where that came from. Thank you very much.
But yes, here we definitely both were like, I think the rattlesnake, because I didn't know what kind of snake it was in Smokies.
It was just large and scary looking.
But this, I was like, oh, damn.
We know exactly
that's not
what
great.
This is.
So I think I definitely felt a definite panic there too. So I pushed you. We hurried down the trail. This is for sure.
But you pushed me.
But I pushed you.
That's
because
right.
Sometimes you need to be pushed. Otherwise, you just stand still.
Because you're a pusher,
mm-hmm.
Katie.
Exactly.
We recognize that we are obviously visitors to this space, yep, where rattlesnakes live. Of course, we get that. And we all have to remember that when we are in a natural space where there are... This space is not for us.
Right.
It is made so that, I mean, obviously it is preserved. Obviously they've created ways for us to engage with it. But at the end of the day, it's their ecosystem.
Yeah.
And we're visitors to that. That's why it's called a visitor's center. And we are visitors. A snake that large or a rattlesnake, at least for me, is still scary and incites fear. So I just like to give them as much space as possible. Because if there's anything I don't want, it is a rattlesnake feeling threatened by me. I want that rattlesnake to know that it's number one, I'm terrified and I'm leaving.
I'm number two on the call sheet.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So we make our way hastily down this section, which is kind of like sweeping down towards what will eventually be a juncture, which we can see. We start to see this from up above. We eventually begin a little bit of a slower pace once we've exited the rattlesnake area. But we are now, I think, a little bit more on guard and a little bit more attention paying to the ground that we are walking on, because it was literally nestled between two rocks that were on the path that we both stepped over. So now we're like, oh, they could be everywhere.
They could be anywhere.
So,
and they blend in, because I stepped right over and didn't see it. Soon we're going to get to our intersection, where it's going to be the end of the 1.9 miles, and it's going to be the intersection of the Hugh Norris Trail and the Sendero Esperanza Trail. And we knew that this was coming up. As we're approaching, we see that there are a few other hikers up ahead. And as we turn the corner, we absolutely startle these hikers.
Yeah.
They're about 100 feet away. I think the situation was this. One of them yelled, the other one, like, I think they were trying to have a green room moment, and we may have stumbled upon this.
Right. I don't think they expected anyone to be
no,
on the trail. Like,
but
that.
Also, they were far enough away, so we aren't sure what was going on. As we are coming to the intersection, we were like, well, we're not really sure what was going on or what we stumbled into, but we're just going to say hello and like not make a big thing of it,
mm-hmm,
which is what we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely just were like, hi, and then fast tracked our way through that little intersection there. Once we are here, we knew that we had to make a left to get on the Sendero Esperanza Trail. So we didn't even stop to consult the map. We just knew where we were going at this point. This is about a mile of downhill. So the trail immediately brings us into more sun. We do kind of hit this plateau here that is fairly large. And I think there was a moment too where you were also like, I need to pee and I'm nervous about snakes. So I need you to scan the ground where I'm going to pee and then turn around. I was like, okay. But this right. was also a spot where we took some time to put more sunblock on, because we just were in it and it was starting to get very warm here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Green rooms were really hard on this trail. Yeah. Because everything's exposed, everything's out. Yeah. There's not a ton of giant rocks to go stand behind. Yeah. And yes, obviously, going off trail can mean you're in snake territory.
Right, right.
I mean, being on trail means you're
yeah.
in snake territory.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely something to have to navigate.
Yeah.
We get onto the Sendero Esperanza Trail, and immediately the difference here is that this is shorter bursts with more curves as we are heading down. We are curving around some things. It's not switchbacks, but it's not long sweeps the way that it was behind the ridge on the Hugh Norris Trail on that leg. So it's a little bit different here. What's great is that it's downhill. and the downhill continues. And the relief is relieving.
This is also where we start to get a little bit more kind of from where we saw the hikers. And here we have some bursts of other plant life and some like really beautiful flowers from what I remember. And we also get into an area where we're back among the giant saguaro cacti, and we're very close to them all. Soon we, as we're continuing to walk, and again, it's not a big jump from the junction to here, we get to a point where we hit another trail junction. And this is going to be the final leg of this loop. And we have a choice to make.
And with that, let's take our next break. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Jacqueline Hyde.
Mm-hmm. I do like this queen
yeah.
a lot. There's so many ways to go with this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is a reference to Jekyll and Hyde,
mm-hmm.
but I do like her name, Jacqueline Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
She could also, her name could be Jekylline.
No. No, it's Jacqueline.
Jacqueline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And who to you is Jacqueline Hyde?
She's a hide and seek queen.
Her last name is spelled Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Jacqueline Hyde.
I was curious if she was going to be like she wore like animal hides part of her drag.
No, PETA would be all over that.
Well, obviously, but they would have to be ethically sourced. Mm-hmm.
Or just prints.
Right.
No, I think she's, I think her drag show is a giant game of hide and seek. And
then
that's how it starts. And then she has to find you. And then the show begins.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she has to find the audience?
Yeah. Or they have to find her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like a site-specific environmental theater drag show.
Yeah.
Where hidden in plain sight is Jacqueline Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know where she is.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any reference
to... I think she's like an illusion queen.
Oh, yeah. Like a magician illusion queen.
Yeah, but there's like a lot of like hidden things happening. Hide and seek, though, is one of the things that maybe starts everything off.
And is there any reference to like her changing personality or
I think
into
so.
A monster
I
or
think
something
that's
like that?
Her act break. She, like everything changes mid-show. Like it's a giant costume change reveal.
So maybe she starts out as like a sort of illusion magician queen and then she ends as like a what?
A terrible monster
mm-hmm. drag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is like three hats on top of itself, but I'm okay with it.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
Yeah, she is. There's a lot of production value here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like her look in the first beginning of the night is very kind of like stark and like wet hair and angular and very sharp. And then as she becomes a monster, it's just like big chaos.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Yeah. Does she have merch?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I know. What her merch is probably like a magic eye thing.
Mm.
Or something that like an optical illusion to it.
Sure.
Where it's something that like makes people hide or something. I don't mm-hmm. know.
Or it's one of those pens where it's like it looks
invisible
like
ink.
It's got the watery section at the top that like something is covered, and then as soon as you write with it, that thing like slides away because of gravity.
And then what song does she incorporate into her act? She's probably like at the beginning of her act, does more Eurythmics.
Mm.
And then after her transformation, what kind of music is she doing?
Does she go into Gaga?
Yeah, Mother maybe. Monster. Maybe that. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. An evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Finishing off with Born This Way.
I like that.
Yeah.
Great. So, Thaddeus and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Jacqueline Hyde.
Hey, for the record, her name could have been Jacqueline.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny to be
this is my daughter, Jack.
Jacqueline.
Alain.
Mm-hmm. You could just call her Jackie.
Jackie. Jackie right. O had one just like it.
Exactly. Here we are, and we now have to decide which way we're going to go down for the final leg of this trail. Now, just to the right, there is the gold mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you want to say gold mine, but it's gold mine.
Like Elliot Gould.
There is a trail that would take us. It's called the Gold Mine Trail, and we could head off to the right, and that would eventually swing us all the way back to the parking lot. And there were some people over there and some people headed toward that area.
Yeah. Well, I think people had come up. We ended up talking to a bunch of people. They're like, oh, where did you come from? And we're like, oh, we just did Wasson Peak. We headed down the Hugh Norris Trail. Now we're on this trail. And they're like, oh, we just hiked up. We hiked up the Wash and now we're here. And we talked to a few people there. But we definitely had an easy choice to make. When we looked over the Gould Mine Trail, we could see that right there at the beginning of there was some incline that was involved. And we were
sort of tired
at this point. And we said no, because we'd been hiking all week. We were sort of like, this was our front load day. We knew it was going to be our front load day at Saguaro, because we had two here. And we were sort of like, let's do this. It's hot. Like, this part of the trail, we were approaching noon, if not there already, and it was very, very warm. And we're kind of like, I think we're done. I think we were done for the day.
Yeah.
So,
but that is typical for us. If we're in the back half of a hiking day, and then it's like, do we want to add this optional thing that's a ton of uphill?
No.
It's probably going to be a no.
Yeah.
So we continue on the Sendero Esperanza Trail, which eventually is going to connect us to the King Canyon Trail and also the King Canyon Wash Trail. Mm-hmm. So at one point, as we continue to make our way down, we get to an area that feels like a cacti graveyard. This is on a hill. We're like turning some corners here. But in this particular area, I don't know if it's because it was particularly exposed, but there were quite a few dead cacti. Mm-hmm. It is really fascinating to see dead cacti.
Yeah.
Not something we get to see at all in the Northeast.
Mm-mm. A lot of these very giant saguaro have these incredibly intricate inner workings. We take some time here, investigate the best we can, just because it is very different and it's very interesting. The dead remains of the cacti hang out for a very long time. Sometimes they even create stumps, and there were many times on this trail where we were able to actually see very close what the inside of the cactus looked like.
I had no idea a cactus had like all of those rods going through it, and that was sort of like creating, I think,
structure.
We're just so used to like tree trunks, right? We have to take a final right turn, and that leads us to the King Canyon Wash Trail. Now, from here, we could have walked up and gotten onto the King Canyon Trail
that we had started on.
But we, one, didn't want to do the uphill, and two, hadn't seen the Wash Trail yet.
Right.
We had seen it from above, so we decided that we were going to do the King Canyon Wash Trail back to the parking lot. It was flat the whole time.
Well, there were some parts where we actually had to climb down. So, like, yes, it is a wash, so at, you know, certain points, water will flow through here, but there are some areas where we actually had to navigate down, which would what would have been a, like, waterfall if there was water flowing through here. There's a lot of people in the wash. Like, that was the one thing that it seemed like most people did this, parked and did the wash. And walked up it and then walked down it, or walked up to the mine and then came back down.
Yeah.
That seemed to be like a very popular route. But for the most part, when we're in it, it is flat. There are sections of it where the walls are very tall, so we can walk in the shade. There are some times where this sort of felt like, now having done it, it sort of had that same feel as the wash that we did on the back half of Golden Canyon in Death Valley.
Yeah.
There was definitely some really interesting things happening here. So it just wasn't, a plain, just flat walk. There was flatness to it. There wasn't a lot of incline the way we were going, but we definitely had to kind of maneuver and get around things, which
was
fun.
There were some larger boulders in here that we had to get around.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was, lots of people. There was this family with a bunch of kids, and we were trying to get, they were coming up this boulder as we were going down, probably to do exactly what you said, which is see the mine and then come back. Right at the end, we do have to make a climb, and the climb is to get back to the parking lot. Not a big deal,
no,
but it was like a tiny little grunt we had to do to finish off.
And I remember this kind of feeling longer than I expected it to feel, based off of how long we were on King Canyon before we hit that first junction on our initial hike out. I was like, God, this feels very long. I think it was just because we were, again, even though we could find some shade based off of the walls, it was high sun, so we were mostly exposed, and I think we were just kind of feeling it. Yeah.
We were definitely feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
But we get back to the parking lot, and we're exhausted, and we make a little plan, and I wanted to go see the javelina at the Javelina Nature Center, and you refused to let me do that.
Mm-hmm.
You kept that from me.
That's right, because I'm mean, and I hate you.
No, that wasn't true. We knew that the Javelina Nature Center was nearby, but I think, did we know it was closed that day? I think we had looked it up and it was closed, or we were too early for it.
It may have also been like, no, it wouldn't have been Easter Sunday because we wouldn't have been traveling back then. Yeah, it was just a strange time for us to be
there. So we didn't get to go to the Javelina Nature Center, and figured, hey, we'll probably see some javelina later on another trail. All right, let's put the Hugh Norris Trail and the Sendero Esperanza Trail on the Karen Stone scale. So we'll do all the way from Waston Peak all the way back down.
I would say because it was downhill, I'd be curious what that uphill would be like.
I don't think it would be as intense as the way we went up, but I am glad we did the loop in this order.
I would say a solid 5 for this because there's a lot of landscape change because we, you know, it wasn't even just Sendero Esperanza. We were in the wash too at the end. And that was definitely like a jaunt that had its own trickery. So I'd say this is a pretty good middle of the road hike all in all on the way down. So I'm giving it a 5.
I was also thinking 5. 5 yeah. feels right yeah. for me because we were headed down. Yes, there was a rattlesnake that we encountered, but that's just par for the course when you're in the desert.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So 10 out of 20 Karen Stones.
Or 1 out of 2.
Right, exactly, yeah. If we're going to reduce our fractions. Mm-hmm. And now let's end this episode with some Jeopardy-style trivia. All right, Mike, do you want to get us started with your trivia today?
Sure. My trivia is rattlesnake rhyme time. So you're going to need to, it's mostly the first word. You're going to just need to tell me what the rhyming word is based off the clue that I'm giving you.
Okay,
and
great.
Most of them are rhymes. Some of them are near rhymes.
Got it.
Great. So for 100, this small and poisonous snake, if instead of venom, it bit you with lies, rumors, and the mean things people said about you behind your back.
What is the tattlesnake?
That's right, a tattlesnake. For 200, this small and venomous snake who prefers cool and rainy climates and whose fangs are like space needles.
What is the Seattle snake?
That's correct. For 300, this small and venomous snake whose scales are like armor and with a spiked tail that looks like a mace.
What is the battle snake?
That's correct. For 400, this small and venomous horned snake with black and white spots all over, or black and white patches, we could also say.
What is the cattle snake?
That's correct. And for 500, this small and venomous snake with a little notch on its back with a pommel-like growth that looks like it's a spot to sit and ride.
You said a pommel-like growth?
Mm-hmm.
Like a pommel horse? Or like a palm?
Like a pommel, which is a part of this.
I don't know.
What's a saddle snake?
Oh, a saddle snake.
Mm-hmm.
I was imagining a saddle too, and I was just not mm-hmm. saying it.
And you weren't there. That's
there
okay.
we go.
Great. And okay. that's rattlesnake rhyme time.
The day has come.
Is it a overlap?
I'm just kidding. There's okay. So we've always said we were like one day, like what are we going to do the one day when we finally write the same Jeopardy category? I know. Maybe it's
great.
The end. Mm-hmm. But we never tell each other. First of all, we never tell each other our Jeopardy categories. And two, we always write our Jeopardy categories ourselves. There is nothing. We use no AI to produce the show whatsoever, especially when it comes to our Jeopardy clues, because we have integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So this is also a rattlesnake category. However, it is not rattlesnake rhyme time.
Mm-hmm.
It is a different rattlesnake category. So
it's rattlesnake crime time.
So this is, do you know your Western North American rattlesnakes?
Okay.
So this is called, girl, you better know your Western North American rattlesnakes.
Great.
Are you ready?
I am as ready as I can be with a category like this. Yes.
Great. For 100. This rattlesnake found, also all of them are found in saguaro.
Okay.
This rattlesnake found in saguaro, most often in sandy areas, moves with a distinct movement pattern like a loop moving through its body, which helps it to minimize contact with the hot ground.
What's a circle snake?
Not a circle
What's
snake.
What's a ring snake?
Not a ring snake, but the loop moves through.
What's a serpentine snake?
And it moves not up and down, but...
What's a sidewinder snake?
There we go. Okay. What is the sidewinder? For 200, this rattlesnake is sometimes confused for other snakes. While rattlesnakes often hibernate in groups, this one tends to hibernate alone or with one or two other snakes. And while we were not in this area while in Saguaro National Park, this snake is named for a desert that is shared by Southern California, Southern Nevada, and Northern Arizona.
What's a Chihuahuan snake?
Not Chihuahuan, not the Chihuahuan desert.
What's the Mojave snake?
Correct. What okay. is the Mojave rattlesnake?
Okay.
For 300, this non-rattlesnake found in saguaro is a burrower and is named for its shiny, wet-looking skin. Its name could have been inspired by a category of paint finish you might select for a wall in your home if you were ill-informed.
What's an eggshell snake? No. What's a high gloss snake?
What is a glossy snake? Okay. There you go. Because if you're choosing high gloss for your home, we need to have an intervention. Okay.
But it just cleans so easily.
No. For 400. This is the longest snake in the West, and when threatened, puts up a full show. While not a rattlesnake, it does get its name from another burrowing animal, which also builds dams. Or the character from Winnie the Pooh, who speaks like this.
What's a beaver snake?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I misled you with building dams. This doesn't build dams. No, it's not a beaver.
What's an owl snake?
No.
What's a kangaroo snake?
No.
What's a donkey snake?
No, we were looking for what is a gopher snake.
Okay, I don't remember gopher from
Sorry
Winnie
about
the Pooh.
Gopher is, gopher's on Winnie the Pooh, right? Mm. It's not beaver, it's gopher.
I don't know.
God, I could be so wrong. Mm-hmm. Everybody coming for me who's listening, I'm pretty sure gopher is a character from Winnie the Pooh.
Okay.
Yes, it's gopher.
Okay, I don't remember gopher.
And
but
he speaks with a list.
Because he's got
that
teeth.
With trolls. Mm-hmm. Okay, for 500, this extremely dangerous rattlesnake is the one we saw from the car. Because, spoiler alert, everybody, we see another rattlesnake soon. Luckily, it's from the car. But this was the one we saw while driving the loop road. Its venom is deadly and will hold its ground if threatened. It gets its name from its general geographic region, as well as the rhombus-shaped design on its posterior.
What's an Arizona diamondback?
Oh, so close. Even bigger, more
What's
general.
A western diamondback?
There you go. What okay. is a western diamondback rattlesnake? Mm-hmm. And that is the one we saw from the car, because mm-hmm. I double-checked the coloring. And yeah, it's terrifying.
Just like you.
You've done better.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.